Good morning, everybody, and thanks for tuning in to Christian Worldview with Tony and Hannah. Outspokenly conservative and unashamedly Christian, this is Hannah Miller, informed and unafraid. Tony stepped out for a few minutes because we've got an interview here in the studio this morning, and I forgot to let you guys know as we went into the break and remind you that we had this interview. This is with Logos Theater, and Logos Theater, you guys know I love this ministry. Anytime I can get them to come in and talk about what they're doing here in the upstate, I want them to come in. So I twist their arms and I say, okay, come in. But you guys have kind of been doing things differently, because we did an interview. We had you guys in to kind of update everybody probably in March, maybe, mm-hmm. when yeah. everything was just changing and you guys had to discontinue. We had just talked about the fact that you guys had The Peep Behind the Scenes, right. which is a brand new play coming at musical, actually, mm-hmm. that you guys were doing, and that production. I think you were able to do one weekend.
There was a few.
We did a few in. Yeah. Okay, so you were able to do a few weekends and then had to shut it down because of coronavirus. And so you guys have been doing a lot of different things. So tell us what you guys have been doing for in the meantime, and then where we're at right now and what is about to happen for Logos Theater.
Yeah, sure. So it's such a pleasure to be here. So thank you for having us, firstly. But so Peep Behind the Scenes, as a ministry, we're multifaceted. So it's mm-hmm. we don't just do the dramatic productions, because we're a ministry. It's not just about entertainment for us. But it's very difficult, because a large source of our income obviously does come from, you know, the theater. Mm-hmm. And then that's where we get most of our interactions with people as well. So it was difficult. You know, this virus has affected everybody, and I think a lot of people in the arts as well. But what we did is we just prayerfully, you know, followed what we could, and then we shifted sort of our focus onto media mm-hmm. a little bit. So we actually shot and produced with a very small crew in very limited space. A program called Nicole's Attic, which mm-hmm. is up online for free. Mm-hmm. We're trying to get some funding to do season two, but we got season one done. So those episodes have been up, and we've had incredible feedback from that. So we figured people, okay, if the only way people are getting, you know, this kind of thing is through media, then we can produce that media. So we just turned our creative sights onto that. And that has been really, really good. And that program is geared towards children. Mm-hmm. And it's exciting and interesting. That's the other thing. We thought all these kids are, you know, stuck in the house, mm-hmm. and where are they going to get, you know, mm-hmm. what kind of entertainment? And we keep our ear to the ground and our nose to the air, so to speak. And we see a lot of kind of terrible things that are running around that kids are watching now. And
about it. I got three kids. I know exactly.
You know, my little siblings, I'm one of 11 kids. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when I'm home, I'm, you know, hanging out with my siblings, and, you know, my little sister has got her phone up and YouTube is up, and I'm like, what is this you're watching? So, you know, having access to something like that, we thought was important. So we were trying to do our part with the gifts God has given mm-hmm. us to give back to people in that way. So there's been that, and there's other things. But I got to tell you, it's amazing how the Lord provides, because there are a lot of places that have really been shut down and had mm-hmm. to quit because of this whole thing. It's been devastating for folks. Mm-hmm. So we're really grateful to the Lord that He's, you know, kept us around. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I said, what we are not just an entertainment thing. We're a ministry. Mm-hmm. So that leads into what we've been up to this summer. So,
well, before you go into that, I forgot to say that your name, which is Zach Johnson.
Yes.
This is Zach Johnson. I said Logos Theater, and then I forgot to say exactly who you are. For all of your fans out there, people on Facebook are like, who is this actual person? So they wanted to know that. And tell us really quickly what your role is at Logos Theater before we
proceed. Yeah. On paper, I am the media relations manager. So I work, but that's kind of a catch-all. I am, at the moment, I sort of float between departments and fill in where I can. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of assistant directing with Nicole. And then a lot of teaching in our college program. I also work with media and film as well. And then I also do some promotional type things as well. I basically just fill in where I'm needed.
Yeah. Well, if you've ever been in ministry, that's pretty much what everybody kind of does.
Right.
We all have the title, the hat we wear, and then all the bags we carry. So,
right.
You know, and I think that that's kind of where you're at. Well, I know exactly.
Yeah. And it's a great place to work too, because it's a family. I mean, mm-hmm. we work for each other and we work together. And because of the training that I got through the college program there, I'm pretty capable of jumping into any department and helping mm-hmm. Because I went went through the college program first, even though I was offered a staff position. I wanted that training because I felt like that was where the Lord was calling me. And the training that I got through that college program was excellent because I can now jump into the makeup department or the costume department, or I can work on marketing, or I can go, you know, edit a film, or then I can go direct a production or go be in a production, or I can go build a set piece. You know, all of those skill sets, or go weld even, you know, all of those skill sets were things I learned. And so that's been that's really enabled me to be very useful in that ministry. So,
well, tell us what's upcoming for you.
Yes.
Guys.
Okay. So, one of the, obviously having to stop Peep was hard for us. Peep behind the scenes is an incredible story. And there's a lot of people that aren't familiar with it. It was a book that was written actually by a woman, back in the, years and years ago, which at that time it was a little rare for a book to become a bestseller, written by a woman, you know, but, is an amazing story. And it's really a story of hope, and it follows a traveling group of, like a traveling acting troupe in England, and they're trying to make it, and there's this woman there, and you know, her husband Augustus is sort of leading this whole troupe, and he's abusive and he's difficult, and so this woman's in a very difficult situation, and she's kind of lost hope, but then through a series of events she finds the gospel, and in that finds hope, but it follows her story and kind of the whole arc to get her to that point. So the story really revolves around this character named Nora and her daughter Rosalie. And she really wants to get her daughter out of this life because she sees that, you know, what's happened to her will happen to her daughter. It's a really, I think, timely story for us to be doing it this year. I think you look at what's going on in the world around us now, and everybody's sequestered in their homes, and, you know, the domestic abuse is way up. You know, people are, you know, the untalked about consequence of all of this protecting people from the virus is people are now, you know, committing suicide in record numbers, and, you know, the amount of hopelessness that people are experiencing. I watched a video popped up on my newsfeed. It was like, you know, people are losing hope, you know, and I think that the character of Nora, you know, though she's not going through a coronavirus in the story, it is very similar because she's in a situation where she feels stuck and trapped and
hopelessness.
Yeah. It doesn't feel like there's a way out. And I think a lot of people can relate to that. I think more so now than before, because now it's more obvious. I think we can cover all of the difficulties and the emptiness of human life when we don't have when we're not satisfied, when things are normal. When things stop being normal,
when we have our busy schedules and we're going to school and we're going to work and we filled our lives with all of this entertainment.
And when that gets disturbed, do you know what I mean? There's that famous poem by Sir Francis Drake where he says, "Disturb us, Lord." But when that gets disturbed and life stops being, it's almost like you stop and you realize where you really are. And I think there's, you know, everybody, and we talk about it a lot, but everybody has that God-shaped hole in them, you know, and when you are in a situation where you can't fill that hole with the things you're used to filling it, you start to realize how empty life really is. And the only hope for people, individual people, is the gospel of Jesus Christ. There is no other hope. And, you know, you look at all the mess in the society and the culture we're dealing with and this influence and that influence, and you just kind of go nuts. But really, the answer for the whole thing is Jesus. That's the answer. You know, and so what this program does and why we're moving forward with doing this program is because we want to be able to present that. And it's not just that story, just someone standing there doing it. It's beautiful. This concert is phenomenal. The music is absolutely phenomenal. It's all original. So you can't hear this anywhere else unless you get it on iTunes or Spotify, which is cool. I'm so glad we've been able to do that.
How did I miss that you guys were on? I didn't know that.
We had to work through the details of that because we hadn't, we have some other stuff on there, but that was really cool. So you can actually get that music this way and listen to it. But the music is so beautiful. It was written by a fellow named Tommy Curtin. And that music is just... Well, Tommy Curtin and Dr. Chavers, who founded the ministry, and then, that music is just phenomenal. So, from a singing perspective, it's fun music to sing, and it's interesting, and it's very musical theater, but it's unique. So, all of that music we're going to present, and then also too, Nicole's been, yep. I mean, we've been working with, so essentially the way it will work is we'll have a smaller ensemble than before, as we're working really hard to make sure the cast is safe. And taking all these added precautions as well, including like health training for staff, installing these NASA certified air purifiers through the mm-hmm. building, checking everybody's temperature before they come in. I mean, we're doing everything we can to keep it as safe as we possibly can. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, with the seats, you know, it is a free concert, and that's the big thing. It's free, mm-hmm. But you do have to call in because we have to social distance the seats out.
Oh yeah, right. You can't just
to make sure that you know we're not overstuffed, and we're trying as much as we can to be respectful mm-hmm. of all of those things. So if you don't feel safe, obviously you don't have to come. Mm-hmm. But we just really encourage people to come out to it.
What's the date, the times, how do they call?
Yeah, so all that information is on our website at thelogostheater.com. But then also, too, the calling in to reserve seats, that number is also on the website. Mm-hmm. But we open this Friday and Saturday, and then we keep going for multiple weekends. And at this point, we're just trying to open it up to as many people as can come as possible. We did mm-hmm. a high school camp the other week. We did the story of our town in 4.5 days, which is okay. nuts, just
yeah.
completely nuts. You know, you don't do that. But we wanted to, you know, again, all the same sort of things with that. But we wanted to push forward the camps, and we were allowed to do that, so we did. And we had a bunch of people come, and again, social distance. And, you know, it's interesting performing to a sea of masks. But anyway, they came out to watch these high schoolers. And there were people there that had not been out of their house for anything other than groceries since March.
Right. Yeah. You know? I had a client this week who said this is our first outing since March.
Yeah.
And I've had to still come in and do this. And so I've been out and about some. My life is pretty much quarantine without official quarantine. I have three kids. I'm homeschooled. I mean, you know, this is about what I do. This is what I do here. And then I go home and I'm pretty much home with my kids. So not a whole lot's changed for me. But I was just stunned because these are families and children who they're going to school every day. They were going to ballet. They were going to swim practice. They were going to music lessons. They were doing art. They had soccer. You know, their lives were very full. And then all of a sudden, it wasn't like, hey, we went on summer break and things kind of came to a conclusion and then we did a break. No, this was just, we woke up one day and we didn't go to school.
Right.
We didn't do anything else. We've just been stuck at home. And that's why we're seeing the mental health crisis that we've been seeing. And Tony and I have talked about that multiple times. It's one of the very first questions that I raised back in March was, well, what's going to happen when we have all of these people that are isolated? Yeah. That we're already a country with a mental health crisis.
Right.
And
right.
it's you know, like 900% now. And that's not an exaggeration. It's been a horrible. And so you guys are providing, you know, your ministry. Ministry-minded, where you want to meet the needs of people. It's not just, hey, we want to make money.
Right, and that's why it's free, the concert, because we want to remove as many barriors as we possibly can for people.
And you recognize that people and their families need to be getting out and doing things. And if you're like, you know what, if we can do this in a safe way, and you guys are checking all the boxes, making sure that you're able to do it in a safe way, we want to meet that need, not just promote what we're doing or make money off of people. That's not what you guys are about. And I think this is just a great example to show to our listeners that really genuinely is y'all's heart. And so the number there, I just pulled it up. The number for the Logos Theater, if you're listening and you can't pull it up, is 864-268-9342. So if you want to call that number, let them know that you would like to come and see the show this weekend. Again, it's a free concert. So make sure you give them a call. Let them know so that they can get a feel for how many people to expect and when they've reached their capacity for this event, because the space is limited, especially because of coronavirus. So, Zach, I'll give you the last word before we go to a break, though. Thanks so much for coming in.
Yeah, thank you so much. And we've been as a ministry around for 50 years mm-hmm. since 1971. So we're coming up on that 50th year. And ever since Dr. Chavers founded it, it was specifically to minister. It wasn't just to entertain. Mm-hmm. And so everything that we're doing now is just, it's finding a new way to do that in the strange new world that we live in.
So. Well, thanks so much. You guys seem to definitely be able to achieve that. And I applaud you for doing so, because it's people's, what's going on? I think people are facing the reality of the needs that they have. They've been able to hide them for so long. And I appreciate and respect so much how you guys are trying to meet people's needs where they're at. This is Christian Worldview with Tony and Hannah. We've been here with Zach Johnson from the Logos Theater. Again, that number is 864-268-9342. And logostheater.com is where you can go for more information about the shows that are coming this weekend for a peek behind the scenes concert that's free. You don't want to miss it.
All right, welcome back. Thanks for listening to the program today, being there on Facebook for us. You can follow us live on Facebook, of course. Please like us and share us if you do that. That helps us promote the program. And if you enjoy the program, tell your friends about the podcast, because it's a great way for us to get subscribers. Leave us a good review. If you go to download the podcast, don't do that without reviewing, giving us a review, a good review, because that causes other people to want to download the podcast as well. It helps the show to grow. All right. I wanted to finish this conversation from Shapiro's article at the Daily Signal, talking about corporations, which, if you know, corporations are becoming a key to progressive victories in this country. A lot of, you know, people have asked me, well, what does it mean the Supreme Court appears poised to protect religious liberty? And my answer is, well, that's great that they're doing that, as long as this idea of religious liberty is embraced by corporations and by other entities in our culture. Because if corporations decide to stop doing business, let's say that you can't discriminate. The Supreme Court says that churches have the right to teach their doctrine without fear of reprisal, and that they can't, that governments can't pass laws that force churches to conform to a particular ideology or way of thinking. And then corporations begin some kind of boycott. They just said, well, we won't allow any business to be done with this particular denomination or this church or this. So corporate America has a lot of power in this country because they control economic activity to a large part. And if they become hostile to religious liberty and accepting of progressive ideology, then that's a major step in the direction of progressives being able to stifle anybody's speech that they disagree with. Now, in light of what I just said, let me read what the way Shapiro put it here. Corporations are by nature risk averse. They seek merely profit and lack of controversy. That's true. Corporations have shareholders. They want to make money. They're in business to make money. And as a byproduct of making money, they provide good paying jobs with good benefits to their employees, because they can't get the kind of employees that they need to have to be successful and to make money unless they're willing to pay well and to offer good retirement programs and so forth. So it benefits everybody. That's the beauty of capitalism. For capitalism to work, everybody has to participate in a way that's beneficial to them. So the hard left has targeted them, that is corporations, as the weakest link in the chain of free speech. If corporations can be bullied into pulling their money from social media networks, those social media networks can be bullied into restricting their free speech cultures. Remove advertising bucks from Instagram and watch as Instagram censors those the woke want censored. So once... here's how it works. It used to work this way with Jesse Jackson, for example, back in the 90s. There was a great book that described Jesse Jackson's tactics called Shakedown. Jesse Jackson was woke before the rest of the country got woke, or before the rest of progressives were woke. He would go to corporations and say, give money to my organization, or we'll target you as a racist. We will put out the word. We will boycott you and give you tons of negative publicity. And most corporations responded by doing exactly what he wanted, because they didn't want to be portrayed that way. So thus the title of the book, Shakedown. Well, now that's been multiplied since then, whereas progressives as a whole have embraced this strategy. They understand that if they can intimidate corporations into limiting free speech, particularly conservative free speech, and promoting woke free speech, then then they've won the battle. I mean, they've gone a long way toward winning the battle. Indeed, such a campaign is now front and center in the culture wars. Major corporations from Coca-Cola to Target have stopped advertising on social media networks, citing the need for more hate speech regulation on those platforms. Let me define hate speech for you. It's anything said by conservatives, anybody on the right. Because anything on the left must be motivated by some type of anti-racism sentiment. So it cannot, by nature, be hate speech. And by the way, this is just a little aside. If you haven't heard some of the phone messages that Tim Scott got when he was promoting police reform, he's the lone African-American senator. And what he got was off-the-wall attacks from progressives using the N-word, threatening his life, threatening his family, saying some of the most horrible things that you can imagine. Now, these were not done in isolation. We're talking about dozens and dozens of phone messages that he received from progressives who would
They're
would
supposed
cancel
to be
somebody.
Out there right. championing right. African Americans. And if you have a darker skin tone than they do, look, one of the most appalling things I've seen on the internet the last few weeks has been example after example after example of videos I've watched with my own eyes of these leftist white kids out there just so foul, so violently going after black police officers, black yeah. Right. business owners, black neighbors, black families, black politicians that you just mentioned. I mean, I watched one where this guy lives across the street and the protesters and the rioters had left trash all over the place across from where his house was, literally across the street. And there's a video of him out there trying tearing them down, and he's upset because he doesn't appreciate or respect the rioting and the looting.
Right.
And these two white kids come up and they just, I mean, they verbally and physically go after this guy. And I'm like, isn't this what you're supposed to? And you're seeing that exposed. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of Candace Owens. I think she can be slightly bombastic just for the purpose of getting attention. But that's my personal opinion. She has a lot of really valuable things to say. And there's a lot of, and it's, Candace Owens, David Harris Jr., Shelby Steele, Larry Elder, you've got list after list after list, though, Thomas Sowell, of African Americans who their blackness doesn't matter because they have a different political
yeah,
stance.
Yeah.
And see,
black
that's
is not about race.
It's
that's
not,
what you need to understand.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. It's this idea that the color of the skin is what's at stake. It's an ideology that's at mm-hmm. stake. And the ideology is Marxism.
Which
and
is why if you're black, if you don't line up with their Marxism,
they're coming after you.
And there's a lot of people who are African American who've embraced the rhetoric, but they don't embrace the Marxism. And now they're getting thrown under the bus and they're saying, well, wait a minute. I thought you guys were on our side. No, I'm sorry. You've been deceived.
Well, Shapiro makes the ultimate point when he says, obviously, those who target corporations will not be satisfied until all non-woke speech is limited or banned. Corporations will be unpleasantly surprised when those they have been asking to appease turn on them as remnants of the evil system. See, progressives mm-hmm. hate corporations
yep.
because corporations make money. They operate at a profit, and Marxism hates the concept of profit. They want to seize corporations just like they did in Venezuela and take the profits and spread it out to everybody, and what they say is equal. Problem is, it never quite becomes equal. The leaders of the movement end up with all the resources, and the foot soldiers end up eating dogs in the street. I mean, that's what's happening in mm-hmm. Venezuela. It's what happens everywhere that progressives win. And that's where we are right now. Progressives are waging all-out war against the United States as a system, and they're using, for the most part, racism is being substituted. Class warfare has been substituted, or racism has been substituted for class warfare from the 1960s, as we're talking about earlier, and they're using that as a way to supplant America. It's not about even getting equal rights. Now, for some people, it is. There are sincere people who don't realize that they're out associating with people that would then turn on them just in a heartbeat, because a lot of these middle to upper middle class people that are out marching and supporting the movement Black Lives Matter, not the sentence that is true that Black Lives Matter, they're out supporting the movement. They don't understand that the movement would confiscate, if they're successful, all of their stuff, because they got it. They'll turn and say, well, your white privilege, you know, while they're apologizing for their white privilege, they don't realize that at some point, then these protesters and rioters will turn on them, just like they turned on the mayor of Seattle, and say that your white privilege means I get to take your stuff. I get to possess your property. I mean, they just don't, that doesn't compute with them, and they're going to be shocked.
For some reason, they think it's only applied. It's like the Seattle mayor who thought, if I just let them do it over there, they're not going to come for me. Well, let me break it to you as gently as I can. Marxists will eventually come for you.
For everybody.
For everybody.
Corporations have neither the principle nor the will to deny the demands of the loudest and the most militant. The product of the woke crusade will not be a less racist America, but a more polarized one. That's because the woke crusade is not truly about reducing racism. It is about attacking fundamental institutions, American history, and our very culture of rights. All of the things we share must be eviscerated, so we will share nothing. And then the true ugliness begins. That is absolutely true. That is undeniable. And that's what's happening. We're in the process of that happening. The only question left to be answered is, will the American people stand for it? Will we allow it to happen? We can still push back against this. We still have the ability to take a stand against it. But we've got to understand it. We can't be duped by it. And we've got to be willing to have the courage of our convictions to take a strong stand against it. For those of you who believe that I'm a pessimist and that I'm talking about the fact that President Trump's reelection campaign is in trouble and that I shouldn't be doing that because President Trump's going to do fine. There's no way that Biden's going to beat him, and on and on.
Polls and make us even sadder, aren't you?
Well, I'm not talking about the polling numbers. I'm talking about the money numbers because there are headlines out there today that would bolster your argument by saying President Trump and the RNC has record-breaking fundraising quarter, which is true. They did. President Trump and the RNC raked in a ton of money. In fact, let me just give you the numbers here. Let's get down here. That's not it right there. This is it. The Republican National Committee and their joint fundraising ventures brought in a combined $131 million in the month of June. Now, that's 1 month. They raised $131 million and more than $266 million the past 3 months. Those are record hauls for Trump and the RNC. That's the most that a president or a campaign combined with the RNC has ever raised in a month or in a quarter. So keep those two numbers in mind. $266 million in the quarter for Trump, RNC, $131 million in June. And there are plenty of headlines out there that'll tell you that. So, did you have a question?
I was going to segue into your next point.
Okay.
Which is, but if you get outside of your echo chamber and you get into the other echo chamber, what you're going to see is a lot of headlines that say the exact same thing about the DNC.
Oh, yes.
And
yes.
Biden, because that is also true.
The DNC in June and the Biden campaign combined raised $141 million and over the last quarter has raised $282.1 million. Now, you may say, well, the month of June, that's only $10 million. But in the quarter, that's $266 million for Republicans in the Trump campaign. It's $282 million for Biden and the DNC. So I'm just telling you, a lot of the information that you're getting that's don't worry about this, the election's going to be fine, you're getting one side of the story. I want you to have both sides because we're not doing ourselves any favors as conservatives when we whistle past the cemetery. That is, we're ignoring problems in the Trump campaign. That hopefully, there was a story out there yesterday where the Trump campaign has been shaken up. They've fired some people. They've moved some people around into different positions. The guy that's leading the Trump campaign is still leading it, but some of the other seats have been shuffled and a few seats have been sent out the door. I hope that that's going to have the effect that they, because, and I'll tell you what precipitated it. It's not so, it's the polling data, but it's also the rally where Trump had to endure pictures of a stadium or a venue, I should say, that was not 100% filled. And somebody, you know, they never should have done that. If you're going to put on a rally, and Trump is, you know, his whole persona, his whole presentation is based around, look how many people love me, look at the, and you put on a rally that doesn't fill an arena, that's devastating to your base, and it's also red meat to your opponents. And so whoever was responsible for that, they need, if they didn't realize what was going on, they didn't understand that this was not going to be filled, they were duped, whatever happened. They need to be held accountable, and because something like that really can't happen again.
No, there needs to be a shakeup. I'd heard from the beginning, about 6 weeks ago, though, that they really, that the Trump campaign did actually have a really good platform that they were going to be moving towards. They had some right. good goals that they were going to be moving towards. And I'm not, of course, you know, they weren't revealed, but trusted sources that were in the campaign said, no, this is what they're planning to do, and it's really good stuff. And, you know, just everything's just kind of been blown up. And they obviously got derailed, and they need to change course. But you're right. We can't live in, we can't do the exact same thing that we accuse the other side, and I'm putting air quotes around that, of doing all the time, which is all they do is live in their echo chambers and consume the things that they agree with. And they never get outside of that. Because, and you see that happening still, even on quote unquote our side. So you really have to. And unfortunately, where we're at, though, is that you've got this leftist echo chamber way over here, and then you've got this right echo chamber, conservative echo chamber way over here, and there's fewer and fewer sources that are meeting in the middle right. where really where we should really be. Yeah. And not only that, but the echo chambers continue to grow and grow and grow. They used to be a smaller thing that you kind of had to work to get into. Now they're ubiquitous. I right. mean, yeah, and it's so unfortunate. And I think that's the challenge for most Americans today is to find somebody that's not in an echo chamber and to find information that's not coming from an echo chamber, whether from the left or the right. And because you're right, I saw headline after headline this morning coming from conservative media
right.
on this
record-breaking RNC.
And then I went and I got on the liberal media, and it's record-breaking DNC. And nobody on either side is saying, well, the other side had a record-breaking as well.
Yeah, Fox News is the only one that had that story that I found
yeah.
that actually compared the numbers mm-hmm. and said, yeah. I mean, it started out with Trump and the RNC has had a great quarter yep. and an incredible month, but Democrats were able to eclipse that. And mm-hmm. I'm telling you, that's not good news.
Yeah, I read an entire article this morning, and it was all about record numbers. I mean, I think I asked you. I was yeah. like, yeah, did you see they have record numbers? He's like, yeah, well, did you see the DNC? I was like, that's nowhere in this article that I
right,
read.
Right.
And that was my first question. We have to learn to ask those questions. Well, what did the DNC do?
Right. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll come back. You know how much I love satire. Found another one today at the National Review. Kyle Smith. This is going to be as if Chief Justice John Roberts were to explain himself to conservatives. And this is just really rich. All right, the U.S. economy added a greater than expected number of payrolls in June from May as regions across the country eased social distancing restrictions and allowed more businesses to reopen. See, this is why you want to know why we're starting to see crackdowns about coronavirus and all of because this is happening and it can happen before November. Good news for the country is bad news for progressives. Just always keep that in mind, if particularly with President Trump. I mean, right now, progressives are moaning and groaning. They would rather see unemployment rise. They would rather see people suffering because their businesses are doing bad. They would rather see that than anything good for the country, because they're willing to just let anything happen that will give some kind of advantage to them in November. Mm-hmm. That's why they should never, ever get the wheels of power. They really shouldn't. the levers of power. Because if in doing that, they're going to then they'll begin to do what's good for progressives. And what's good for progressives? All you have to do is look at every major U.S. city is bad for them. I mean, it's bad for America. Mm-hmm. So anyway, all right. Meanwhile, the unemployment rate fell from May's level, but held at a historically high level as millions of Americans remained out of work with the pandemic still underway. Here are the main metrics. Change in non-farm payrolls up 4.8 million versus what was expected, which is 3.23 million. So it was about is over a million more jobs added than what the predictions were. Unemployment rate, 11.1% versus 12.5% that was expected. Average hourly earnings month on month is down 1.2% versus 0.8%. And average hourly earnings year on year plus 5%, which is a little bit less than the 5.3% that was expected. So there's just the raw numbers for
you. Do you remember what our peak unemployment was percentage during this season, this time with COVID?
It was over 20%.
Yeah, okay, that's what I thought. We got over. Yeah, we got to 20.
Because 20% was like the Depression era.
Yes.
I want to say it was 23%.
Well, that's the number that was ringing in my mind, so let's be wrong together.
Okay, that'd be fine with me.
We'll be right or wrong together. Okay, 23%, so we've half that,
right.
More about. You know, if it was 23%, that's half. 20% little. So, yeah, good news. I was just scrolling social media during the break there and was seeing those numbers and making the exact same point that you just made, which is, they have to. That's why you're seeing the second. Did you know that over the last 15 days, every single day has been the lowest record number of deaths in the country since this whole thing started.
Right.
So if we had 1,000 deaths 15 days ago, and that was the lowest number, the next day there was 900. That was the new record low. The next day it was 800, and that was the new record low. Every day we've set a new record low for COVID-19 deaths in this country, and not a single media outlet is reporting on that. All they're talking about is, oh, there's an increase in cases, and the hospitals are going to be overwhelmed. Well, I mean, I looked at the data this morning. I went and looked at South Carolina, DHEC, where they're keeping track of all of this stuff, and we're going to be fine. If we see a pretty much a big increase, a big spike, which we're not seeing, but even if it was a massive spike, we would still be okay. Because here's the thing that they're not telling you, which is the fact that there are hospital beds occupied. That's the number that they're running out, 7,815 in the state of South Carolina, okay?
Right.
How many of those are actually hospitalized with COVID-19? That's the question you should ask yourself. And that number is 1,160.
Right.
So a very minor amount of those now, it's, of the total hospital beds are actually COVID-19. I mean, it's 1,000 people.
Yeah, because you've got to think.
Of the 7,800.
Yeah, and you've got to remember they opened up elective surgeries.
That's right. And so they could tamp those back down. If things started getting out of control, they can tamp those back down and say, all right, we're going to start cutting these and start making more accommodations for COVID-19
And for people that don't go to the hospital a lot, I mean, when I was as a pastor and I would go all the time, during flu season, it was common to see people in the hallways because there were no rooms available.
Look, my mother-in-law went to the hospital when she was pregnant, which was years and years and years ago.
Right.
And they didn't have a bed for her. It was during flu season. They didn't have a bed for her.
She almost delivered in the hallway. Well, that's what I'm saying. People hospitalized because of the flu, but we didn't shut down any businesses. We didn't drive a truck through the economy. We didn't put people out of work. We did none of those things, and yet we still strained the hospital season with a good, healthy flu season. And when I say healthy, I'm talking about that's probably the wrong word to use, but an unhealthy flu season where you have a lot of people getting sick with the flu.
In the state of South Carolina, we still have 2,801 beds left that are totally unoccupied in the state. So, but again, you have over almost 7,800 that are occupied, and about 6,000 of those, or 6,500 of those, are people who are non-COVID. So we can, again, we've got plenty of room if there is a spike, but again, the death rate is plummeting.
Right.
Plummeting.
And only the red states are you seeing the massive surge. I mean, you realize the total number of cases of COVID Texas is fourth. Okay, you've got New York, California, New Jersey, and then Texas is fourth. But then if you look at it per million, Texas is 34th.
I think it's 34. Something in the 30s.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's what people never do. All right, I've got to get into this. I promise I was going to read this about John Roberts.
I'm sorry, I forgot about that. No, it's okay.
Here's just a portion of it. This is what John Roberts would say to conservatives. Sometimes the fellows would ask me for my philosophy of life, which is intertwined with my legal philosophy, which is what I want to speak to you about today. I know that some of you are calling attention to how when the liberals have five votes without me, I sometimes let forth a mighty roar denouncing the irreparable harm to our constitutional fabric. But when the liberals have only four votes without me, I tend to join them while issuing a meek, technicality-filled ruling explaining why I'm unable to do anything conservative because, well, that's just how the law works. I know that some of you are calling my judicial philosophy loserism behind my back, and that is hurtful to me. Our side is not losing. That's preposterous. I prefer the term alternative winning. Let me explain how alternative winning works. This week, though I did stop the liberals from singling out religious schools for punishment in Montana, I know I disappointed conservatives when I voted the wrong way about abortion, again, and even voted against myself just 4 years ago on a similar case. What you don't give me enough credit for is quoting Edmund Burke in my decision. Burke, I need not remind you, is a conservative icon. You think you would have gotten a Burke reference out of a Sotomayor or a Kagan? No. That's what John Roberts gave you. I don't merely let our adversaries whip conservatives about the head and neck with rusty chains. I quote Edmund Burke while I join them in whipping conservatives about the head and neck with rusty chains. Burke should warm your heart as you pass into unconsciousness because your spinal column feels like it's being stomped by the orcs. That is alternative winning. You can read some more if you want to read the rest of it. The rest of it is just as entertaining. It's really
it's
a great
so
point.
It's so painful.
It's painful. It's incredibly painful. But
we're
but
laughing because we don't because want to cry
we'd have
on
to
air.
We would have to cry. But here's the other point of this. Satire is hard to pull off. Good satire. Mm-hmm. It takes a keen intellect to write it in a way that's not over the top. This is good stuff. Go to National Review and you can find it there. I think you'd enjoy the rest of the piece. We just don't have time to do it. All right, don't forget our podcast because it'll be uploaded here shortly. It'll be available for you. You can listen to part one, part two. That's hour one, hour two. And of course, it's free. And the more you leave us good reviews and the more you tell others about it, the more this program grows. And I know that you would like that. Have a great day. See you later.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Talk, His Radio Network, or the Radio Training Network.